America is great because America is good.
This is the Radio Werewolf News Hour, brought to you by RadioWerewolf.com.
A rousing victory song set the tone on the final night of the Democratic National Convention. Speakers have been making the case for Hillary Clinton in the last few days, and now it was her daughter's turn.
How does she keep going amid the sound and the fury of politics? Here's how. It's because she never, ever forgets who she's fighting for.
The former Secretary of State then took to the stage to make history as the first female presidential nominee of either major party.
And so, my friends, it is with humility, determination, and boundless confidence in America's promise that I accept your nomination for president.
Clinton then sought out common ground with moderate Republicans, differentiating herself from the GOP candidate Donald Trump.
We will not build a wall. Instead, we will build an economy where everyone who wants a good job can get one. We will not ban a religion. We will work with all Americans and our allies to fight and defeat terrorism.
Within her own party, she reached out to backers of Bernie Sanders after a long nomination campaign.
And to all of your supporters here and around the country, I want you to know, I've heard you. Your cause is our cause.
She set herself out as a unifier in divided times, unifying the party and the country, two things Clinton will seek to achieve in order to take the nation's highest office.
The Clinton campaign presents Donald Trump as dictator's best friend. In speeches and campaign ads, Trump himself is cast as a dictator to be.
We are trying to elect a president, not a dictator.
He's running his country, and at least he's a leader, you know, unlike what we have in this country.
Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, right? You know what he did well? He killed terrorists. He did that so good.
So Donald Trump stands accused of admiring dictators, while few mention Hillary Clinton had closely dealt with leaders widely seen as dictators and was even friends with some. Not long before Egypt's Hosni Mubarak was ousted, Mrs. Clinton said, quote, "I really consider President and Mrs. Mubarak to be friends of my family." This is from 2009. Then, of course, the tide turned. People revolted against what they saw as an oppressive regime that consistently violated human rights. And Hosni Mubarak, who had enjoyed U.S. support for many years, fell. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she seemed very pragmatic about relations with Saudi Arabia. It looked like a real partnership. The State Department, under Mrs. Clinton, approved the sale of billions of dollars worth of advanced U.S. weapons to the Gulf nation. Her assistant secretary said the sales were, quote-unquote, a top priority for Hillary Clinton. Saudi Arabia's dismal human rights record and the fact that it is an authoritarian state apparently did not affect this partnership. By the way, Saudi Arabia has kindly donated up to $25 million to the Clinton Foundation for charity purposes. Hillary Clinton's husband Bill has forged his own ties with leaders widely perceived as dictators. Paul Kagame of Rwanda cracked down on his opposition, armed and commanded a rebellion in neighboring Congo to gain control of the mineral-rich part of that country. Mr. Clinton praised and even awarded him.
A special word of appreciation for the leadership of President Kagame.
I'm greatly humbled to receive this Clinton Global citizen award.
Hillary Clinton presents Trump as dictator's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is PR, or do you think she's really concerned?
Oh, I don't think she's really concerned. It's completely political. I mean, she's the best friend of many dictators. You know, it's sort of pot calling the kettle black. She's just trying to find ways to demonize Trump, just as they demonize Putin. And you put them together, you got double demonization, if that's possible. I mean, hello? Next thing you know, they'll blame Putin for global warming.
Mrs. Clinton now calls on voters to imagine what a friend to dictators Trump would be as president, but her record shows she herself has been friends with a few. In Washington, I'm Ganesh Chekyan, RT.
All right, guys, so this is pretty damn interesting. I was scrolling through Facebook and I saw someone post this. This person claims that they found an ad on Craigslist posted about within the last 24 hours. It says, actors needed for national convention in Philadelphia. That's where the DNC is happening. Looking for 700 people to be utilized as actors during the national convention. We currently have a number of empty seats that will need to be filled, as we are currently removing a number of people and need to refill their seats for the remainder of the conference. You will be paid $50 each night for the remainder of the convention. You will be required to cheer at all times and will be asked to dress properly and possibly wear some promotional material.
All right, so let's start here on one of these mainstream media news sites that are crooked and obviously pro-Hillary Clinton all the way. I want to barf. Hillary Clinton becomes first female president nominee of the major U.S. political party. You know what? I, along with many other of my friends, again, I'm going to say this loud and clear, I'm not voting for the witch. I don't care if she has all the pieces that a woman has. I'm not voting for her. Vote for me because I'm a woman. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Moving on. Now that we got that little number out of the way, here is on Slate.com. This is what I referenced in the video and what the DNC does not want you to know about their convention there. Walking out of the DNC with Bernie's heartbroken delegates. Here's another report. I want to show you a few on this, but the Bernie DNC walkout was a masterful bit of media manipulation. This is on Gawker.com. And reports say hundreds, some say dozens. They can't even agree. But nonetheless, there is that. Here is another report. This is on Politico, the same news site that Hillary Clinton's organization follows or has been following. But hundreds of Sanders supporters walk out after Clinton was nominated. Not that I care for either one, but nonetheless, they walked out. Now, we also know this. You guys can Google the clip, but Bernie Sanders, when he came and delivered his speech the other day, he stood up there and basically said, I'm with her, as to the woman Hillary Clinton, and cast his vote, per se, for Hillary Clinton in front of all his supporters in the audience. Now, I have to question, was he even a candidate to begin with? I don't know, but it's kind of fishy that is what he's doing. Let me full-fledged support to Hillary Clinton. But what went down? Well, here's 538.com, where it gives a whole bunch of breakdown of what happened at the DNC convention. And here I scrolled down to about 9:10 p.m. here, and this is from Nate Silver. And he says, you see the chairs on the floor are almost completely full, where there are a fair number of empty seats in the seating bowl, which isn't a coincidence. He says, the delegates seated on the floor are generally the more pro-Clinton ones. Yes. All the pro-Clinton ones were given the frontal seats versus the Bernie Sanders supporters, but the more pro-Clinton ones, whereas the bowl was more Bernie-friendly. This is where many left due to the Bernie Sanders walk out, or he says getting beer somewhere. We saw a bit of the same, a bit, not much, some, but not much, of the anti-Trump delegates weren't heard from very much after the roll call either. Now, here's the other thing. The DNC walkout, or the Bernie supporters walkout, was something that definitely happened there, and it did make an impact on the convention. However, let's go to the Trump one. Now, this is on time.com. Convention floor erupts after Never Trump action fails. Now, there was obviously an attempt there, but it failed, whereas one didn't, one did. Just something to think about. I honestly believe that America is sick and tired of the crap that these globalists are delivering on a daily basis. Now, not only are they sick and tired of that crap, but I am too. We need to keep our eyes on who the real enemy is. That is the globalists, the ruling elite, those pulling the strings from behind the scenes, those cheating, lying, conniving people such as Hillary Clinton, who manipulate their way into the system. Crazy, crazy stuff. And what I cannot believe is the level of corruption that got her to the place that she's at. I mean, we must not forget about her husband and all the cheating scandals that happened with him, Monica Lewinsky in particular, not to mention the money scandals between the two, the charity scandals between the two. The woman should be in jail for crying out loud. The only reason she's not, and I've spoken to Larry Nichols and others on this, is because she's got her hands in the pockets of many of them. And she's got tons of organizations. You mess with one, they're gonna mess with you, kind of a deal. It's a big blackmail scandal going on. And I believe that's exactly what's happening right underneath our noses, especially with Bernie Sanders and the two, and how he is just gung-ho about this whole thing. It's disturbing, it's sick. And all that to say, you know, we better get ready for a wild ride, because when the presidential nominee comes running up and we have our Trump or Hillary ticket, well, let me just say this. If Hillary Clinton gets in, we're in big trouble. Our freedoms are in our trouble. Our internet freedoms are in trouble. There's lots of issues there. If Trump gets in, I guess time will tell how that plays out. I'm very hopeful. And I honestly believe or hope that our country will be different, because if something doesn't happen now, this will be the last election, so to speak, where we actually have a say, unless some kind of revolution happens and is underway in this country, both spiritually speaking as well. Anyhow, lots of information I know that I've been throwing at you these last couple of days, but keep in mind, be ready, because it's about to get bumpy. And let me also say this, I have seen an uptick in terrorist activity. I've seen an uptick in news reports on terrorist activities. I honestly think we've ticked the globalists off. We've pissed them off. Let me just say it bluntly, we've pissed them off. And now they're kind of upping their ante, and they want more distress, more chaos. They're pushing a civil war, they're pushing civil riots. And I don't foresee that settling down, especially not under Hillary. And they're going to do anything and everything to cause strife and chaos here in America. And you really need to be ready for that.
But outside the Democratic National Convention, demonstrators have been protesting against Clinton's nomination for the fourth day in a row.
Feel the burn! Feel the burn! Feel the burn!
Protesters expressed their support for Clinton's former rival, Senator Bernie Sanders, lashing out at the party's decision. They chanted, "We won't vote for Hillary," while some even vowed to quit the Democratic Party. RT's Caleb Maupin went to one of the Sanders protests to ask people what they feel about the split among Democratic voters.
From the stage of the Democratic National Convention, Hillary Clinton attempted to unify her party and presented as moving forward in order to defeat Donald Trump in November. However, outside the convention, there are many rank-and-file Democrats who are completely disillusioned with the system and frustrated with what went on inside the convention hall. They say they aren't ready to support Hillary Clinton and that they're very frustrated and unsure of exactly where to go next.
I feel like it wasn't a fair primary. I feel like there were a lot of votes not counted, a lot of voter suppression. I mean, I feel like Hillary Clinton's campaign didn't care at all that there was voter suppression.
I think people just have to stand up now and pick a third party candidate. I don't think you can trust Hillary. She's flip-flopped so many times. I think just because she says she's going to do something now doesn't mean that she's going to change her mind, you know, once she gets in there.
She does not represent my values. At this point, most of us are leaving the Democratic Party. We leave, and then we just continue on, and we get into the politics for ourselves. We start our revolution with Bernie's next group. And the protests, I don't think the mass media has really covered what's going on outside the DNC. Mass media and CNN and all the ones that don't want to show us.
Well, as that protester was just saying, there have been claims the media has turned a blind eye to the large demonstrations. RT's Guyane Chichikan has more.
Images in the media coverage of the Democratic Convention project party unity and cheers for Hillary Clinton.
There's only really been two other presidents who even came close to displaying the kind of convention enthusiasm for a successor or a potential one that we saw last night.
Leading news media have kept their coverage of protests at the convention at a minimum. Once even interrupted it to show a music band performance.
Please, if you look over this way.
All right, Miguel, thank you so much. We're going to cut you off. We're going to cover right now Boys to Men.
The convention kicked off with a massive leak of Democratic National Committee emails, from which the public learned that from the beginning of the presidential race, the party that claimed to be neutral conspired to undermine Bernie Sanders. Much of the media focus, however, was on the Clinton campaign's explanation that it was Russia trying to influence the election.
Releasing these emails for the purpose of actually helping Donald Trump. I don't think it's coincidental that these emails were released on the eve of our convention here. And that's disturbing.
Dozens of articles and news reports instantly popped up, steering the public to believe that Russia is trying to steal the U.S. election. At this point, there is no evidence Russia leaked the Democratic Party's emails. But the media are already running with that theory.
So it's a story that seems to be unsubstantiated. Clearly, they want to divert attention away from the content of the emails, especially during the all-important Democratic National Convention, which is very important to the Democrats. They have every incentive to try to create a distraction. They have a lot of allies in the media who are willing to talk about this and cover someone making effectively unsubstantiated claims. It is a distraction.
Before the leak of DNC emails, leading news outlets had already cast Trump as a Russian agent, based on the fact that he said he wanted good relations with Moscow and thought NATO should not be anti-Russian.
I haven't seen any evidence that Russia or any other foreign power is trying to influence unduly the American election. There's been some speculation that many of the people in the so-called prestige press, mainstream press, basically are following the storyline that has been put out by the Democratic National Committee, the Clinton campaign.
By now, many of us have already gotten used to a certain level of bias in the media. Bernie Sanders complained about lopsided media coverage, and we found out from leaked emails that his own party used its resources, including media connections, to defeat him. Protests at the Republican convention were covered more extensively than those of the Democratic convention. But now, something more dangerous may be unfolding. In the absence of any evidence that Russia was behind the leaks, leading media outlets seriously suggest Russia is trying to steal the U.S. election. To paraphrase this headline in The Atlantic, it is now official. Hillary Clinton has turned this into a campaign against Russia, and major media organizations are helping to push that narrative. In Washington, I'm Ganesh Chakyan, RT.
Whistleblower website WikiLeaks has released what it says are audio recordings pulled from the emails of the Democratic National Committee. According to WikiLeaks, up to 29 audio files were obtained through hacking and the servers of the Democratic National Committee. In one recording, a supporter of the Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton can be heard complaining about the influence of her rival Bernie Sanders in the party. The recordings are the second batch that has rocked the Democratic Party and forced the committee chairwoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, to step down. Joining us now is Stephen Kelly. He's a former NSA contractor, and he joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Many thanks for joining us here on Press TV, Mr. Kelly. Now, first of all, what do you make of the second batch of leaks?
Well, I have to say, not since Al Capone have we seen a criminal that was so hard to put behind bars as we see with Hillary Clinton. But honestly, we've come a long way since J. Edgar Hoover. The FBI now is run by the criminals that he would have certainly been chasing after nowadays.
Right now, Mr. Kelly, when the first batch came out from the WikiLeaks, we saw basically the mainstream media and even the Democratic National Convention not focus on that, but focus more on who did, who is involved in that leak or who's responsible. There was a lot of bashing of Russia, so to speak. However, nobody actually dealt with the revelations itself. Is that what we're going to see in this time around as well?
Well, I think you're basically reaffirming what I just said, that obviously the FBI, as well as the Justice Department, we've seen clearly beyond a shadow of a doubt, are staffed at the highest levels by career criminals who, you know, are been linked to major crimes in the past. And it's just the fact that we all have short memories that we don't remember these things. But, you know, the thing is we're talking about emails involving Hillary complaining about Bernie Sanders doing well. This is silly, because what's really the issue here is Hillary getting flat out caught selling government jobs to the highest bidder through promises of work for donations. And she actually, we have a dead body in response to this. There's a young man who is a DNC staffer who was an IT man who became aware of this, who tried to tell the FBI. Unfortunately, the people that he thought were FBI turned out to be a Clinton hit team. And subsequently, after killing the young man in Washington, D.C., they got into a shootout with the police. Now, the FBI took those people into custody, and we haven't heard anything since. So, Mr. Putin and Edward Snowden, if you have these files, please release them immediately. We need to save the world from Hillary Clinton.
Well, Mr. Kelly, there are those who do say that none of this is really going to make an impact if Bernie Sanders, who is the topic of a lot of these leaks, not going to step up and make this an issue. Do you see it that way?
Well, I'm really glad that you mentioned Bernie Sanders, because, you know, I know that Press TV and most of the Arabic Islamic world has been hoping that Bernie Sanders would save them from this annihilation that Hillary promises. And to see him get up on stage and endorse Hillary, I think, is beyond a stab in the back. Now, I see the media trying to portray the Bernie Sanders supporters, who should be righteously upset, being portrayed now as some sort of thug, but we've also learned through the emails that Hillary has always portrayed the demonstrators and the Soros-paid agitators as Bernie Soros supporters, when in actuality they were all instigated and put into place by the DNC. So again, the DNC we've seen now is just an arm of the Clinton Foundation, which we all know is a criminal enterprise. And it's just that it's like the country has been taken over by criminals, and the biggest mobster has risen to the top and is able to bribe everybody and extort everybody because of her emails and what's really on those emails into making her president. And this, I'm sure, was something that she had planned when she put those servers in her home.
Okay, let's leave it there for now. That's Stephen Kelly. He's a former NSA contractor, and he's joining us via Skype from Los Angeles. Mr. Kelly, thank you very much indeed for your comments here on Press TV.
My last video, a couple days ago, I put out this bold proposal. So Germany, I'm announcing the No Allah Akbar for 1 week challenge. You may call me a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Someday we can do this. We can go a whole week with that. I made that video on Sunday and it's Wednesday, so how are we doing so far? Muslims, I was really pulling for you. We went like 12 hours without an Allah Akbar. And then I read, a Muslim terrorist went into a Catholic church, beheaded the priest in front of the parish while videotaping it, of course. So I have to say that this means you failed your challenge. You see, the problem is I typically just do about 3 videos a week, but these Allah Akbars are coming like 5 or 6 times a week, so I just don't have time for it. I'm sorry, Muslims, I'm not Islamophobic, I just don't have time to do all your terrorist attacks. So I was reading just like mainstream news articles about the convention, and I read this. White nationalists love Trump's convention. GOP is becoming the de facto white party. And I read that and I thought, you know, that's a really interesting observation. I wonder who thought of that. Yeah, then I see this. It's me. They quoted me on Twitter. White nationalist video blogger Ramsey Paul, GOP is becoming the de facto white party. Nothing wrong with that. So the mainstream media, yeah, they read Ramsey Paul tweets. And because of that, I put a lot of thought and consideration in my tweets. In fact, I remember when I tweeted that. And I would like to say that's like original thought of mine, but it's not that controversial. Even people on the left are always saying, the Republican Party's a party of the white people. And I'll link to another video. They had a march in the Democratic Convention, and they were saying, all white people to the back. You bitch, get to the back. We'll force you in the back otherwise. The Democrats are huge on tribal identity politics. In fact, if you watch the convention, it's like all no white males. White males are like the most evil thing. I can't imagine if you're a white male, what sort of psychosis you'd have to vote Democrat. Unless you're being paid, they hate you. They despise you. Just watch the convention. So me commenting on that the GOP's the de facto white party, I don't think it's really that controversial. People on the left say that, people on the right. The problem is, I added, and there is nothing wrong with that. Because see, according to the diversity advocates, it's wrong to have anything white. That's evil. Now, like the African Americans, 95% of them are in the Democratic Party. But no one says anything's wrong with that. The Democrats say, oh, we got an issue. We got too many blacks in our party. No, that's considered a good thing. Or no one says, like, the Jews are primarily in the Democratic Party. No one says that's the issue. But if there's whites, too many whites in anything, that's a problem. I'm like, no, it isn't. There's no more of a problem than blacks being in the Democratic Party. Why can't whites be in the Republican Party? It's this identity. And that's where we are right now in this country, is identity. 30, 40 years ago, politics were different because we were a 90% white nation. Democrats and Republicans, 90% by far, is a white parties. Both were white parties. But because of multiculturalism and stuff, we're now tribalism. That's just how it is. That's human nature. The Democrats have been that way a long time. So it's just inevitable that the Republican Party or whites would want to have an interest too. It doesn't mean we hate other people, but if other groups like blacks, Hispanics, and Jews, they could be proud of being a part of the Democratic Party and the core of the party, then we whites can be proud of being part of the Republican Party with no apologies. Talk to you guys later.
A special prosecutor will be added to the Minnesota legal team prosecuting the Philando Castile case. It'll be former U.S. Department of Justice attorney Don Lewis. The team will decide whether to charge the police officer who was involved in the fatal shooting. Castile's girlfriend recorded the incident and then immediately posted the video to Facebook. The lead attorney in the case is Ramsey County Attorney John Choi, who said that he was elected to uphold the law and intends to do so.
A federal appeals court blocked North Carolina's 2013 law that required voters to show photo identification. The three-judge panel found the law passed with an intent of racial discrimination. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals panel ruled that House Bill 589 must be blocked immediately due to violations of the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act. The panel also issued strong words related to the North Carolina legislature during the legal opinion. In particular, the panel accused the state legislature of not revealing their true intentions with a bill that constitutes remedies for problems that do not exist.
It looks like a Mexican border agency is now aiding illegal immigrants. This story comes to us courtesy of Fox News. They're writing that south of the border, Grupo Beta is seen as a humanitarian organization that steers northbound migrants through the crossfire of warring drug cartels. But in Texas, many view it as part of a pipeline that sends humans and drugs pouring into the United States, all with the funding and backing of the Mexican government. They state that Grupo Beta, supported by Mexico's National Institute of Migration, may be the sole bastion of relief for migrants in the Tamaulipas state across the border from the southeast Texas region, which includes such cities as Brownsville, Laredo, and McAllen. They write that the 25-year-old agency was created to help Tijuana deal with huge numbers of migrants passing through, but has since expanded its reach across the northern and southern borders of Mexico. Critics say the agency, whose motto is vocation, humanitarianism, and loyalty, is complicit in breaking U.S. laws. Well, not for long, as I'm sure when Donald Trump is in office, we won't be seeing any of this activity, as there'll be a nice big wall preventing the flow of illegal immigrants into this country. For the Next News Network, I'm Gary Franchi.
You guys may remember back in April, there was two state regulators and a city employee that were charged with official misconduct and evidence tampering, among other things, when it comes to the Flint water crisis. Now, this goes up to many different levels. We've heard for the cries for the UN to come and get involved in this issue, which is the last thing that you want. But now it seems like Michigan's Attorney General has lined up more charges, stating that six more employees are charged with crimes related to the lead contamination of the water in Flint. So today, this judge had authorized by the office of Bill Shute, and the plans formally announced charges this morning at a conference. Now, all these charges are with misconduct within the office. They're saying that they had willful neglect of duty and various conspiracy counts. Now, they're not going into the details of the conspiracy counts. They're just saying that there's multiple conspiracy counts. They're saying that the city of 100,000 used the Flint River for tap water for 18 months to save money, and that the residents were using improperly treated water that had coursed through aging pipes and fixtures that released toxic lead, among other things. So more charges coming down here. I just wanted to update on the situation. It's been DAPU 7.
Today we're announcing charges against six individuals from two state departments, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. Their offenses vary, but there's an overall theme and repeated pattern. Each of these individuals attempted to bury or cover up, to downplay or to hide information that contradicted their own narrative, their story. And their narrative and their story was, there's nothing wrong with Flint water, and that it was perfectly safe to use. In essence, these individuals concealed the truth. They were criminally wrong to do so. Now, we've now charged nine people with crimes, and we filed a civil suit against two companies that had the knowledge and the ability to stop the problem, but they failed. And as of right now, we've interviewed over 200 people. And we're not done. We're a long way from done. We're way far from done. We continue to work every day to find the truth for Flint. And we'll not rest, this team and I, until we have delivered justice for Flint.
I'm not going to try to prove water's wet right here, but it looks pretty obvious, as you see, on the same day, July 28th, and I'm glad you pointed that out, but on July 28th, you have Kristen Larder's report being buried, right? And at the same time, the DEQ, July 28th, is changing and manipulating those reports. We all saw that in the public, right, of manipulating the lead and copper monitoring reports. So you have two agencies manipulating reports on the same day. So in that lockstep going to stage left, that seems significant to me, but I'm going to let that play out in our investigation and in the courtroom.
Refugee policies have put the German Chancellor in the hot seat as Angela Merkel addressed the media in the wake of a series of deadly attacks in the country. RT's Peter Oliver reports.
After a tumultuous 11 days here in Germany, which saw four attacks, three of those carried out by asylum seekers and two with direct links to Islamic State, Angela Merkel still says she's sticking to her original plan when it comes to refugees.
The fact that the two men who came to Germany as refugees are responsible for the attacks in Würzburg and Ansbach mocks the country that took them in. And I would like to add that it is totally unimportant whether these two arrived with the many other refugees before or after September the 4th of last year.
Germany took in over 1 million refugees last year at Mrs. Merkel's invitation. The latest numbers show almost 200,000 arrived in the first quarter of 2016. The Würzburg axe attack and the Ansbach suicide bombing have turned public opinion online. Many throwing her words, wir schaffen das, we can do it, when it comes to refugees, right back at her. While others are unhappy, she hasn't closed borders. Then there are those who aren't holding back their fury and calling for her to step down.
Of course, it's not going down very well. You know, you need leadership in the times of crisis. You need someone to step up and say, okay, things are under control. We're going to act accordingly. We're going to do what is necessary. It's a scandal. You implement a policy that proves to be wrong, that costs 20, 25 people's lives, and you still are not prepared to change the course of your policy, and there's something fundamentally wrong.
The Bavarian CSU party may be part of Merkel's coalition, but there's little love lost at the moment.
People in Bavaria and in whole Germany say that, of course, Mrs. Merkel has failed in a historical dimension, because she decided to ignore German immigration law and she opened the borders of our country last year for 2 million of immigrants from countries outside Europe.
For many in the country, Angela Merkel's comments came far too late. Merkel still quiet was a trend on social media. Saturday, we'll see another march in Berlin of right-wing groups that say it's time she stood down. Peter Oliver, RT Berlin.
Yes, my friends, first they came for the guns. The German government is now calling for an all-out EU crackdown on gun control. According to Sputnik News, they are reporting that the German government has called for an EU-wide crackdown on gun controls following Friday's Munich shootings, amidst reports that the teenage gunman responsible for the rampage bought his weapons on the dark web. Now, they write here that as police are investigating the circumstances around the shooting, which left 9 victims plus the gunman dead, speculation is turning to how an 18-year-old named Ali Sanbali, now I should also mention that the certain media outlets are actually westernizing this guy's name, okay? They're calling him David and not Ali in an attempt to try to make it not seem like it's a Muslim attack. Now, they say that this man, Ali Sanbali, acquired a Glock handgun and 300 rounds of ammunition, they say, which would have been impossible to do so legally under Germany's current gun laws. That's according to a German newspaper. And police believe that he bought the gun on the dark web, as they say it's a highly secure part of the internet, only accessible with special types of software and known to be used by criminals in the smuggling of weapons and other illegal items. So basically what they're saying is, look, they're going to try and crack down on this dark web. But again, gun ownership in the UK or in the EU being cracked down, I think it's a bad idea. I think that people should be able to own guns to protect themselves, their family, and, of course, to protect from tyranny. And, of course, this shooting presents another opportunity for them to crack down on that. For the Next News Network, I'm Gary Franchi.
Pope demands Poland open borders to third world migrants. Pope Francis demanded Poland overcome fear and open their borders to Muslim migrants who are fleeing wars and hunger. The pontiff claimed wars are nothing to do with religion, as all religions want peace. As Europe is beset almost daily by Islamic terror attacks, the Pope chastised Poland's government for refusing to accept thousands of migrants from the Middle East and Africa. He said opening the country's borders would take great wisdom and compassion. Headlining World Youth Day in Krakow, the pontiff said that many Poles had emigrated, and so urged the country to understand why migrants are now arriving in Europe. He said, "We must not be afraid to say the truth, the world is at war because it has lost peace." Alluding to Poles' reluctance to accept Muslim migrants, the Pope declared that none of the conflict in the world is related to religion in any way. He said, "When I speak of war, I speak of wars over interests, money, resources, not religion. All religions want peace, it's the others who want war." 70% of Poles don't want their nation to accept Muslim migrants. Pope Francis urged Poland to welcome migrants fleeing from a number of things, including hunger and the lack of fundamental rights. He told the crowd in Krakow, "You need a willingness to accept people fleeing from wars and hunger, solidarity with people deprived of their fundamental rights, including freedom and safety to profess their faith." While Poles hold their countryman Pope John Paul II in great respect, the current pontiff has alienated many in the country. Journalist Katarzyna Wisniewska wrote that for a Catholic country, Poland is in an unusual position with Pope Francis' visit. "Nobody here is waiting for the Pope," she stated.
During a Wednesday conference at the Israeli parliament, European Union envoy Lars Fabreg Andersen strongly criticized Israel for destroying Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank. 91 of the structures demolished in the first 6 months of 2016 were funded by the EU. But Palestinians believe the EU's criticism is not enough and are calling on the European bloc to take practical steps against Israel's illegal measures.
The problem is that the European just criticized Israel on this issue. They didn't take any steps in order to make Israel pay for the destruction. And this is not just the first time. If we go back to 2000, yani Israel almost destroyed all the infrastructure that has been funded by the international community. Israel has immune from any punishment or any international steps that can be taken against it. They are immune by the United States, by Europe.
A recent report by the Israeli NGO B'Tselem revealed that only in the first half of 2016, Israel has razed 168 Palestinian houses in Area C, which accounts for 60% of the whole West Bank and is under full control of Israel. This is more than the annual average for the past decade except 2013. Commentators say that Israel keeps pushing Palestinians to leave Area C to pave the way for more land grab and prevent Palestinians from establishing their long-dreamed Palestinian state there.
Israel is creating new facts on the ground, and these facts for Israel are irreversible facts, which means that the only choice for Israel is to destroy any chance to reach a two-state solution, which will allow the Palestinians to establish their own independent state on the borders of 1967 with Jerusalem as its capital.
At the end of the day, Palestinian experts say Israel will go on with its policies of home demolitions, land confiscation, and settlement expansion, as long as they know the EU and the rest of the international community would only ask them to respect international laws. Israeli authorities have lately increased demolishing Palestinian structures to force them out of their land for the sake of expanding Israeli settlements and going ahead with the construction of a separation wall in the occupied West Bank. Mona Kandil for Press TV, occupied Ramallah.
Now, Russia says the U.S. is refusing to provide intelligence on militants' locations in the Syrian city of Aleppo. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said Washington has not provided Moscow with data on the al-Nusra Front terrorists who have attempted to merge with other militants in Syria. Shoigu added that Russia has repeatedly called on, quote, Syria's warring parties to reconcile, but militants violated the truce agreements each time by shelling Aleppo's residential areas and attacking government forces' positions. The United States has previously rejected a proposal by Russia to conduct joint airstrikes against Daesh terrorists in Syria. Washington ruled out coordination with the Russians regarding military operations in Syria.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says the International Olympic Committee's blanket ban on the country's track and field team is, quote, beyond the legal pale. In a meeting with Russian Olympic athletes in Moscow, Putin vowed that Russia would do everything it could to protect its athletes from further unwarranted political persecution. Rally Wagerman reports from Moscow.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has condemned what he describes as a clear double standard used by the International Olympic Committee after it upheld a ban on Russia's entire track and field team from participating in the Rio Games. Putin stated that the IOC ruling violates the spirit of the Olympic Charter.
Мы не можем согласиться
We cannot agree with the blanket disqualification of our track and field athletes, who, if I want to stress, an absolutely clean doping record. We will not and cannot accept this kind of open discrimination. This goes completely against the Olympic movement's principles. But we will fight for justice exclusively through legal means and will act in strict accordance with the Olympic Charter. I'm sure the Russian Olympic Committee will continue to defend our athletes' interests.
Although Western media have portrayed the doping allegations as beyond reproach, experts point out that the IOC's investigation was less than thorough.
Neither WADA nor the IOC conducted full-scale investigations in Russia. They did not approach Russian athletes. They did not approach Russian officials. They did not approach the Ministry of Sports of Russia. They did not conduct an investigation, a full-fledged investigation, that involved all of the people that are actually accused of doing these things.
Russia's president made it clear that he considers the ban a politically motivated decision that violates basic legal norms and international law.
This campaign that targets our country's athletes includes the use of notorious double standards and the principle of collective responsibility, or as was said, reversal of the presumption of innocence, which is not compatible with sport and not compatible with justice and basic legal norms in general.
Despite the setbacks, Putin expressed confidence that Russia's Olympic athletes would be cheered on by millions of supporters, both here in Russia and abroad.
Putin's strongly worded condemnation of the IOC's decision to ban dozens of Russian athletes without providing any evidence of individual wrongdoing reflects the level of frustration and disappointment felt here in Moscow. For many Russians, the Rio Games have been marred by what they describe as a political witch hunt. Riley Wagaman, Press TV, Moscow.
I go live now and speak to Alp Altinoz, who's deputy chairman of the Turkish People's Democratic Party. Alp, thanks for joining us. You're in Istanbul there. Now, how far do you think this purge could go? Because we've already seen what members of the military, the judiciary, we've seen policemen suspended. Now it's the media that's the subject of the crackdown. Where will this end?
Hello. First of all, I want to state that these purges are made in the name of defeating the coup d'etat. And our party thinks that to defeat the coup d'etat, you should democratize the country. If you don't democratize the country, you can beat one coup d'etat, but another military coup d'etat will come. And military coup d'etats occur in authoritarian regimes, not in democratic regimes. So our party made the call to lift the emergency law, and we voted against the emergency law. Now, every day, the government issues legal decrees based on the emergency law. And today, they had shut down many TV channels, newspapers, etc. And this is not the correct way to fight against a coup d'etat, to shut down newspapers or arrest newspaper editors or columnists. You should democratize the country, and especially we call for a return to the peace process, which was broken by Mr. Erdogan last year on the 24th of July, and they began a war over the Kurds. And this coup d'etat was organized beneath the martial conditions, the war conditions going on in our country. And if there had not occurred a war in the country, or if there had not occurred intentions to intervene in Syria, this coup d'etat would not happen. They could not find the conditions to make a military intervention to the state power. And we say that the only solution to go out of this crisis is a peace policy in our country and also in Syria, in all the region countries, because Turkey had become a country isolated from all its neighbors, which has problems with all its neighbors. I mean, still the government carries the deed to topple Mr. Assad in Damascus. And still they are very worried about what's going on in Aleppo. And today in Kamishlo, in Rojava, there had occurred a suicide bombing from the ISIS. And we are very preoccupied that this suicide bombing was also helped by the government. And we call for a democratization of the country, but we see that the government still has authoritarian tendencies, and they want to utilize the post-coup conditions in order to raise their authoritarian tendencies. For example, they want to bring back the capital punishment executions, and we see that the torture is applied to people under custody. Torture is a crime against humanity, and nobody should live torture in custodies.
I'm afraid I'm just going to have to wrap things up there, just because we've got a few more interviews we're going to squeeze in this hour. But thanks for joining us. Alp Altinor is our guest, Deputy Chairman of the People's Democratic Party.
Hi. I saw in a French newspaper today that a Corsican nationalist group has said in public that if, in response to these terror attacks on the continent, they said that if one of these Muslim groups should by any chance attack one from their people, these Corsicans, this nationalist group, is going to respond with force, with weapons. And this reminds me of something. Actually, it reminds me of two things. First of all, it reminds me of a prison. Because when I was in prison and we had Muslims in our block, if you treated them well, they would treat you like shit. So after a while, all the Norwegians understood that the only way to be treated well by these guys was to treat them like shit. You had to never ever let them come ahead of you in line. You had to push them, physically just push them out of the way if you walked past them. And you had to behave like a complete asshole, because that was the only thing they respected. They respected force or the threat of force. Nothing else. If you were kind to them, they would walk all over you. If you did any favors for them, they would treat you like their slave. So, the second thing this reminds me of is Lebanon in the 1980s, where you had a lot of Western diplomats and businessmen who were kidnapped by different Muslim groups. And the US diplomacy was working overdrive to get them out, and the British and the French, all these different Western governments were doing their best to have their citizens released. And it took ages. They were stuck there for several years. They were kidnapped, and they were kept hostage or a prisoner in some shitty apartment in Lebanon for several years. And then one of these clever Muslim groups kidnapped a Russian diplomat, or rather a Soviet diplomat. And the KGB knew perfectly well who had done this. They identified them. So they took one of these guys in his own home and they cut his head off. They took the head of this Muslim guy, put it in the bag, and then they went to the mosque that they knew this particular group had some association with. And they took the bag and they put it in front of the imam, and they told him, if our diplomat is not released ASAP, the rest of your group is going to end up like this. Have a nice day. And then they went. And of course, the Russian diplomat, he wasn't stuck in some shitty apartment for years. He was released after a few hours. That's how it works. When you see all these Western politicians and Western diplomats relate to these Muslim terrorists as if they were like us, then you know that you are dealing with idiots, that we, our governments, are idiots and are sending idiots to deal with them. The Muslims in question are like the criminal Muslims in prison. I'm not saying all Muslims are like that, but I'm saying that Muslim terrorists and Muslim criminals are like that. They only respect force or the threat of force. If you try to talk to them, they will take it as a sign of weakness. If you try to bargain with them, if you try to do them a favor, if you do anything for them, they will take it as a sign of weakness, and they will treat you accordingly. And I can add that the Soviets never had any problems again with Soviet diplomats or businessmen or others being kidnapped in Lebanon ever after. They solved the problem like this, or rather like this. And that's reality. That's how this world works, that's how it works in parts of this world. And I can also add to those who welcome the refugees to our countries that this is how it's going to be in our part of the world as well. Because when we bring them here, we bring their mentality, we bring their culture, and we bring their way of doing things.